Welcome to the On.net show. We are trying a different approach today. Bertrand is out on vacation, I believe. And so I'm filling in, and we had a couple snafus with getting the Hangout to start, but we're good now. Today we're going to talk about, actually, first we should do announcements like we normally do. So the big news is we shipped .NET Core last week, .NET Core 1.0, so that's pretty exciting. We announced that at the Red Hat Dev Nation conference in San Francisco, and we released bits, which you can get on our website, and you can see our write-up on our blog, and we were really excited about that, and a lot of people have started using it. Today, we're going to talk about how Bing uses .NET Core. And so we have a guest today, an engineer from the Bing team. And his name is Mukul.
Subberwal, yes.
Yes, sorry about that. And he's been using, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, so I work in the Bing team, and you know, we're a .NET shop, obviously, and we're going to talk about basically Bing and .NET Core.
That is the story, and I think
that is the story.
We've been working together for a long time.
It's actually been a while. We got on this when Bing was going to move to Windows Server 2012 release candidate 4 years ago, and I think that was the first time we sort of started talking about, you know, hey, we should talk about it more.
About your use of .NET
on Channel 9 and stuff. So yeah, this is great.
Yeah, I think at that time, if I recall, that was when we introduced multi-core JITs.
We did, yes. Yeah. Yes. We talked about that with Vance and Mounty. We talked about the background GC also.
It was both.
It was both background GC and multi-core JIT, which was, you know, both of those things were pretty cool because we got latency improvements and we got startup improvements because of the multi-core JIT.
Definitely. I'm just seeing if this is actually working. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. What would you say at that particular time frame the performance improvement was?
We have a blog out. I don't remember exactly, but it was pretty significant. Like this was there was a lot of latency improvements, and then there was also a lot of operationals because now we can start faster.
So
there was those things as well. So
meaning you had mechanisms within your infrastructure to mitigate slower performance, and you were able to basically throw those mitigations out because the native performance was good enough. Is that the way to think about it?
That's one way to put it. One of the cool things that we sort of did at that time was we started, Perfview had also come, 2012 was actually pretty good. Perfview had also just come out. Vance had put it on his blog at the time. And we basically sort of, that was sort of the start from where .NET, Perfview, and Bing sort of became really connected.
Let's move over a tiny bit. I think the lighting will be slightly better. Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to geek out, talk about the things that, we've been doing for the past, 4 years in Bing. So, and obviously, .NET Core, which is, the best thing that's happened to .NET in a while, is something, we're sort of marching on towards.
So what would you say, when I think about .NET Core, I think about a couple different value propositions. One of them is obviously cross-platform.
Yep.
Another one is this kind of more flexible deployment model.
Yep.
Obviously lots of people like the open source thing. Are those the value propositions that kind of apply to the Bing use case, or is it something different?
Yeah, those are great because, we get, .NET becomes better because of the community. But I think this is one thing that I think a lot of people wonder, if I'm going to be on Windows, .NET Core is cross-platform the only thing that's, that's there. Actually, there's a couple of cool things that, because of the deployment models, in .NET Core you get. One of the coolest things is the fact that now the runtime is with your app.
Yeah.
And you know that opens up possibilities like you can use cross-gen. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that. Basically, to, you know, sort of pre-compile your assemblies, and now you have, you know, actual native code. So if you were having startup issues, or you know, if your app really needs to sort of, you know, not have that much JIT, then you know, cross-gen is a great thing, and that's one of the sort of great value props with Core CLR being part of your app.
Right. That's actually an excellent point. So when you guys cross-gen, do you guys do that in the build lab or on the target machine?
Oh, so on the we previously, you know, if we had to ngen, it would always had to be, you know, on the specific machine. Just
that
because
was with .NET framework because it
right,
was required.
It was required, right? Because like, and the reason I think was, you know, your bits could have changed, but you know, different, you know, it's just required. And yeah, now we just, you know, you can do it in the build lab. So that's exactly what we do.
Yeah. So I'll just fill people in for just a sec on what it is we're talking about. So .NET, because multiple, .NET has this facility called
ngen.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the best way to say this.
Yeah.
So it's a native compilation technology, which allows you to compile all your code ahead of time, meaning before the app runs, to native code such that either all of it or most of it doesn't need to JIT. So just-in-time compilation. So that's super beneficial for startup.
Yeah.
Because a startup, really all you want is that native instructions are hitting the CPU and keeping the CPU busy executing your app code. The effort of using the CPU to first compile your .NET bytecode into assembly code, which is then executed by the CPU, is not necessarily super helpful. It doesn't deliver the best performance. So a native compilation technology helps with that. So we have a few variants of that. So on .NET Framework, we call it ngen. That has existed for at least 10 years, probably 15 years. And so the way it works, it has this characteristic where you have to do that on the target machine, on the machine that the app is on. And you actually have to install the app first.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, the app has to be there already. And with .NET Core, since it's self-contained, basically, it's similar in some sense, which is the app and the runtime have to be together at the point of compilation. But since .NET Core can be self-contained, as long as the app and the runtime always are distributed together, then it all works. Everything's self-consistent, and that native compiled code always matches the runtime, and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
And this is a little bit distinct from our .NET Native.
Oh, we're back on.
I think we're back on the air now. Sorry about that, folks. So we had just finished discussing how cross-gen and ngen works. I think the part that got cut out is we were talking about how cross-gen is that's right. Now I remember.
We're talking about the pull request that we should make for the documentation.
Yes, exactly. So we should talk a document cross-gen a bit more. We just haven't quite gotten to that. So that was the only part that got missed.
Yeah.
Okay,
and so then I was going to talk about the fact that sort of, Bing uses .NET 4.6.1 with Vue.jit, which is, you know, we have, you know, faster compile times because of Vue.jit when we moved to Vue.jit, and the march to sort of, you know, to talk about .NET Core, the march to get to .NET Core, which is sort of been an interesting, you know, exercises we've been going through and working with the .NET team to make it easier for the next set of people who want to migrate. So I definitely wanted to chat about, you know, the thing that the MS Core lib facade that we ended up making.
Which was actually
I remember the pull request. It's called 4874. The pull request was 4874 on Core CLR. It's the reason why, you know, if you were a .NET developer and you wanted to port to .NET Core, prior to that pull request, I mean, you know, it was we had to basically, you know, you had to like, you know, you still have to use the same compilation tools, but there was a lot of stuff that was potentially, missing. But with that pull request, we enabled MS Core Lib as a facade, and that basically, you know, has given the .NET team and anybody actually the capability to, you know, we can start adding things, that would be like a great migration strategy. So the binary compatibility for existing apps becomes, you know, really sort of compelling, because a lot of stuff will work as we release. We've just released the facade right now, but in our next .NET Core release, you know, there'll be more APIs, more binary compatibility, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, definitely one of the goals is, we should back up. Tell me why, maybe you said this, I was fiddling a little bit, trying to make sure everything's working. Tell me why an MS Core Lib facade was so important to you. Like, you could say like, oh, you know, this particular MS Core Lib collection, this particular collection is not in .NET Core, so I'll just make a system.collections foo package, and that'll then enable that functionality, and I'll be good. Opposed to basically creating this MS Core Lib assembly with all of this functionality in it. Like, why did you go that route?
The key thing to sort of think is, you know, people have .NET assemblies which they've built over the years.
Yeah.
And the thing that every assembly has in it is that it's sort of compiled against MS Core Lib. And so you can imagine that all their we're going to start off getting a little technical, but I'll sort of explain. You have an assembly, and that assembly is sort of linked against MS Core Lib, and MS Core Lib has a system collections something is defined there. So your .NET assembly is referring to that, and in .NET Core, prior to this pull request, which did go out in .NET Core 1.0, you'd have to, like, your assembly wasn't compatible. It may be compatible because ultimately MS Core Lib was still there, but now what we've done is MS Core Lib is just a facade. So I'll explain what that means. Basically, this assembly, the mscorelib.dl, it's like 30 kilobytes now in .NET Core, it basically has type forwarding information, and the type forwarding information is going to the renamed assembly, which we call system.private.corelib, uh-huh. Right? And it's sort of redirected to that. But the good thing about having the facade is that now my .NET assembly that was mostly cross-platform, I wasn't, uh-huh. Pinboking into Windows functionality, and it was just using like a, dictionary and a few things. Now I suddenly, take that assembly, put that in .NET Core, and it just works because the MS Core Lib facade is sort of, type forwarding to things that are in .NET Core. So that was key functionality.
Yeah. So kind of what I'm hearing is there's probably a significant percentage of .NET assemblies that have been written over time, particularly actually in the earlier years, just because there was less functionality available. And they didn't take advantage of the UI stack. They didn't p-invoke into native code. It's basically just simple, and I'm not using simple in any bad sort of sense.
Yeah.
It's just simple C# code.
Yep.
Or VB, doesn't matter the language, but it's simple .NET code that uses fairly basic .NET concepts and types. Just because it's assembly references don't necessarily match, or its NuGet target framework doesn't necessarily match, doesn't mean we should stop it from running.
Exactly.
People should have the option to kind of opt in to kind of a compatibility layer to at least try to see if it works. And I know when I talked to Miguel, actually, he's of the opinion, which I agree with, which is not only, like, there's the one case of assemblies that perfectly play within the lines and will work. There's other cases that actually have some functionality that is outside the lines and some that's inside.
Yeah.
As long as you call within the right code paths, you're fine.
I'm also in
that camp.
I also in that camp, and is that if the assembly is, you know, isn't going to call into some method, and you know, that's, I mean, obviously, you know, it's from, you know, Microsoft, you know, we can't go and tell everyone, hey, this will just work, and but then they'll be upset because, you know, some code path, some exceptional code path got taken that did end up p-invoking. So there's stuff like that.
But that's opt-in.
But that's opt-in, right? Yeah. And this sort of capability, this pull request, you know, sort of this feature, you know, which was I was like really sort of pushing for, got into .NET Core, and basically gives us the capability, you know, us and the open source community, you know, to keep adding things back in and sort of pay for play manner. So one of the things that I remember there was people were talking about is, well, are you bringing all the APIs back and it's going to be bad for performance? Is that, not really. It's just an opt-in functionality that you can use.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to, yeah, to help you guys on that front. So maybe we should talk a little bit about, so Bing is obviously a cloud workload.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's quite kind of topical and modern in the, like the kind of app that it is.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about, I guess maybe where you've had success using .NET for that kind of workload? Like obviously Bing.com gets a bunch of requests every second of the day.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, Bing.com, I mean, it's, you know, like other Microsoft, you know, cloud services, I mean, Bing is it's a really big, it's a really big, you know, service. And you can imagine we get like thousands, I mean,
bazillion.
I mean, I can, couldn't even come up with a number actually, you know, it's probably a very large number of millions. So obviously for us, you know, as a cloud service, stability matters a lot. You don't want to give, you know, you don't want to, you know, Bing.com shouldn't be down for some reason, or so there's a lot of stability that comes with, you know, running managed code. You can, there's a whole class of bugs that just don't happen, and so running .NET and then ASP.NET has been sort of really successful. With obviously, you know, with .NET ASP.NET Core, there's going to be even more sort of, you know, room for improvement with respect to perf, but basically perf definitely matters for Bing. And one of the things, you know, is that it's not just .NET, it's the .NET ecosystem. It's the tooling around .NET. You know, it's the profiling tools, it's the profiling APIs, all that stuff that's there in .NET, and some of which is in .NET Core, is basically one of the, you know, sort of strong pillars that Bing relies on pretty much on a daily basis to, you know, to basically be able to diagnose the problems or, you know, yeah.
I see. So you're saying you guys go a little bit beyond, you know, just pure Visual Studio and IntelliSense. You know, there's some, we'll say, high-end diagnostic APIs for probably performance and reliability. And
yep.
And to be successful, just because, you know, tomorrow you know, it might be the Super Bowl and you get a big spike.
Yep.
And so, you know, your logs come in, things weren't as good as you wanted, so now you need to prepare for next year's Super Bowl kind of thing.
Exactly. And so
it's funny thing is I'm not even a football fan. But you're anyway, not about- no, I like other sports.
You like other sports. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, definitely one of the, you know, things that, you know, we use in .NET is the profiling APIs and also Purview, which is, you know, if people haven't used Purview on .NET, it is an amazing tool. Everyone should use it. So what in Bing, you can imagine, you know, we're a cloud service, so people aren't opening Purview on the machine and stuff like that, right? So we have what we've done is called Purview as a service, which is basically sort of, it's basically running Purview in a mode that is, sort of separates the data side of things, you know, which is talking to on Windows ETW with the UI layer, because we don't have to use the UI layer on Bing.
Right.
So we have, like, you know, we have an ASP.NET app that can get that profile data and show it to you as a visualization, as opposed to looking at itself in Purview. So the thing is that I did talk to Vance, and we're at least his plan is that, you know, the data APIs that gets split inside Purview, so it will be there for, you know, cross-platform purposes, because Purview,
because,
I mean, we've blogged about it, that Purview can actually open up Linux-based performance data.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can imagine this applies to a lot of scenarios and a lot of other cloud services can start, you know, using these technologies that we'll start enabling.
Right. So another way of saying that is if you're using .NET today on Windows Server in kind of the sort of scenario you're doing, which is, you know, a high performance cloud service, and you rely on these extra tools. If you so happen to move to other operating systems, you'll actually be able to use the same tools, have the same experience.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to caveat that yes, you have to, you know, you have to use Perfect, for example, which will, you know, which. But yes, the idea is that we want to bring up everything that we can for .NET to be there for .NET Core, and why not, right? It's a great platform to be able to take your code, run it on Windows, and if you want to run it on Linux or Mac OS X, you should be able to.
Makes sense. So I was just going to bring up one more topic, and then I think we'll be getting pretty close to time, which is, I know with a bunch of folks we talked to, and there's a bunch of emphasis on this in the industry, of microservices and containers. I guess two questions on that. Is that, if you can talk about it, is that something that Bing thinks is important for your kind of cloud service? And how do you see .NET fitting into that kind of model?
So yeah, absolutely. I mean, microservices is in some sense, the industry trend and term is there, but you can imagine cloud services like Bing have a disparate set of services. So the industry trend of microservices is absolutely one of, you know, it is, I see, you know, working with Bing every day, it makes total sense for so many applications. So yes, it's definitely, Windows Server 2016 has containers for Windows, so that's going to be, it's going to be pretty awesome. And .NET Core, I mean, the fact that you're going to have that app and it runs the runtime with you is going to be incredibly important, because more microservices will want to take, you know, they'll want to version independently. And the key concept there is, if you want to version independently, well, you got to make sure that the runtime is also versioned independently. And so CoreCLR and .NET Core being part of your app, that deployment model is going to be, I think it's going to be, you know, the shared runtime is what we've sort of put out right now, but that's going to be sort of the next key thing that will enable large set of apps.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, so there's two different deployment models for .NET Core. There's the shared framework kind and then the standalone kind. I actually think they're both interesting for the container, because there's really two models. It's like, one is, my container app is completely, you know, unique and standalone, and I just want it only in terms of it. And the other one is actually, oh, I want to make a broad decision about my base platform across at least this release of my app. And the benefit you get from that is, you know, with containers, you kind of have this inheritance relationship. And then that base container that has the shared framework in it is actually shared across all the apps. So that can actually help from a density perspective.
True.
So I think actually both of them are interesting. But the fact that in both cases, .NET Core is distinct from the operating system, so you actually get both of those choices. So I think that's what makes it fairly container friendly.
Yeah. It's .NET Core. I mean, I get giddy talking about .NET Core, but it is literally the best thing that's happened to .NET in such a long time.
Yeah. And I think it's quite well aligned with industry trends. Another thing which you kind of touched on is for .NET Core 1.0, we have both shared and standalone. I would say we put 90%+ of our effort behind the shared model. We knew that we wouldn't be able to do a good job with both, so we put our effort behind the shared one. We thought, I mean, for one, that's the experience you use in development.
Right, yeah.
And then we thought more people would be either happy or happy enough with the shared one for 1.0. And then we've actually started talking about the experience for the standalone case again. So I'm not too sure when... The awesome story for that is going to come out. We don't have a timeline yet, but super important.
Yeah, the shared runtime. I mean, it makes total sense. That's what all our .NET developers were used to. They were used to .NET being a, you know, either, you know, in Windows just runnable and, you know, this .NET command line.
So a unit.
It makes total sense that shared runtimes comes first.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
So I think we're going to continue to work together.
Yep.
I think it'll be interesting to see. Probably we should probably do this again in 6 months or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Talk about when Bing actually starts putting out production workloads on .NET Core.
Yeah, exactly. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we can kind of talk about what that experience was like.
Yeah, happy to be there.
Yeah, I think since we had some troubles with the call today, we don't actually have any questions this time. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Awesome. I'm not quite too sure who's on the show next week, but we'll definitely post that on Twitter and on the blog. And thanks for watching.